Echoes of Freedom. Chapter 1. The Arrival. The prison bus rumbled along the frostbitten road, the iron beast trailing a cloud of steam in the chilly Portland morning. Edward Eddie Carlyle sat silently, his wrists bound in cold steel cuffs, his gaze fixed on the bleak expanse ahead. Each bump in the road rattled through the bus, unsettling the dozen other prisoners who muttered curses or sat in sullen silence. But Eddie remained still, his face a mask of quiet resignation. The year was 1947, and Eddie's once promising life as a banker had been reduced to this, a chain-bound shuffle toward the towering gates of Blackstone Penitentiary. The charges against him, double murder, had sealed his fate with two consecutive life sentences. His wife and her lover were dead, and though Eddie maintained his innocence, the evidence had been damning. Portland's courtrooms had swiftly branded him guilty, and society had washed its hands of him. The bus screeched to a halt, its doors wheezing open. A blast of icy wind greeted the new arrivals, carrying with it the scent of damp earth and stone. Eddie stepped down onto the gravel, his polished shoes long gone, replaced by the scuffed prison-issued boots that seemed too large for his slender frame. Before him loomed Blackstone, a fortress of misery. Its walls, blackened with decades of soot and weather, seemed to rise endlessly into the gray sky. The barred windows glared like accusing eyes. Eddie felt their judgment, but he didn't flinch. He simply adjusted his glasses and waited as the guards barked orders, herding the new inmates like cattle. "Move it, Carlyle," barked a guard with a grizzled face and a billy club resting casually on his shoulder. "You're gonna love it here. Blackstone's got everything a fella like you needs. Hard beds, cold meals, and plenty of friends who'd love to get to know you real close." The other prisoners chuckled darkly, their laughter echoing against the prison's stone facade. Eddie said nothing, his lips a tight line as he shuffled forward. Inside the gates, the stark reality of prison life settled on Eddie's shoulders like a lead weight. He was processed with ruthless efficiency. Fingerprints, a numbered uniform, and the issuance of his inmate number, 72694. Gone was the tailored suit and clean-shaven face of Edward Carlyle, the banker. Now, he was simply another body in the machine of Blackstone Penitentiary. Franklin Frank O'Connor, a long-serving inmate with a sharp eye for newcomers, leaned against the mess hall wall, watching the new arrivals file in. At 50 years old, Frank had spent more than half his life behind these walls, and he'd learned to read people quickly. Eddie stood out. Unlike the other men who shuffled in with bowed heads or snarling defiance, Eddie carried himself with a strange calmness. "That one there," Frank muttered to his friend Willie, gesturing toward Eddie. "What do you make of him?" Willie, a wiry man with a perpetual smirk, squinted at Eddie. "Banker type. He'll crack by Christmas." "Maybe," Frank said, though his instincts told him otherwise. There was something about the way Eddie's eyes scanned the room, not with fear, but with a quiet calculation, that intrigued him. Eddie's first week at Blackstone was a brutal education. The guards were indifferent at best and sadistic at worst. The inmates quickly established a hierarchy, and Eddie, with his slight frame and soft-spoken demeanor, found himself near the bottom. Assigned to the prison laundry, he worked long hours scrubbing and folding uniforms in the damp, steam-filled room. It was here that he first encountered Reggie Rex Harland, the leader of a gang known as the Dogs. Rex was a towering figure with a shaved head and a predatory smile. He enjoyed terrorizing weaker inmates, and Eddie became his new favorite target. "Hey, Carlyle," Rex said one day, cornering Eddie near the washing vats. "You look like you're good with your hands. Why don't you help me out with something?" Eddie didn't respond, his hands gripping the edge of the laundry cart. Rex leaned in closer, his grin widening. "What's the matter? Too good to talk to the likes of me?" Before Eddie could reply, Rex grabbed the front of his shirt and shoved him against the wall. The room fell silent as the other inmates stopped working, their eyes darting nervously. Violence was a daily occurrence in Blackstone, and nobody wanted to get involved. Eddie's glasses slipped from his face, clattering to the floor. Rex laughed, his breath reeking of tobacco. "You're gonna learn the rules around here, Carlyle. Rule number one, you do what I say." Later that evening, as Eddie sat alone in the dimly lit cell block, nursing bruises from Rex's latest attack, he heard the sound of footsteps approaching. It was Frank, carrying a small tin cup of water. "Word of advice, kid," Frank said, sliding the cup through the bars. "Don't show fear. That's how they get you." Eddie looked up, his eyes narrowing. "What do you suggest I do, then?" Fight back. Frank chuckled. Not unless you've got a death wish. You're not built for that. But there are other ways to survive here. And what do you want in return for this advice? Eddie asked, his voice cautious. Nothing yet, Frank replied. Let's just say I've got a feeling about you. Something tells me you're not the typical fish they dump in this pond. Eddie took the cup, his hand steady despite the pain in his ribs. I appreciate the gesture. But I'm not here to make friends. Suit yourself, Frank said, stepping back into the shadows. But you'll learn soon enough. Nobody makes it out of Blackstone alone. As the cellblock lights dimmed, Eddie lay on his cot, staring at the cracked ceiling. His mind churned, not with fear or anger, but with a quiet resolve. He didn't know how, and he didn't know when, but one thing was certain. He wouldn't spend the rest of his life in Blackstone Penitentiary. Chapter 2. Finding Allies. Blackstone Penitentiary was a machine designed to crush men. Every detail of its design, from the towering windowless walls to the constant barking orders of guards, conspired to strip away identity and hope. For most, it worked. For Edward Eddie Carlyle, it was an endless test of endurance. The routine of prison life quickly became a numbing cycle. The morning bell rang at 5:30 a.m., followed by a silent march to the mess hall for breakfast. The food was barely edible, watery gruel, stale bread, and, on rare occasions, a greasy slab of meat. Afterward, the inmates dispersed to their assignments. Laundry, kitchen duty, maintenance, or, for the unlucky ones, the quarry. Eddie worked in the laundry, the air perpetually damp and reeking of detergent and mildew. It was a place of monotony, but also a crucible where alliances were forged and feuds ignited. It didn't take long for Eddie to realize that survival in Blackstone wasn't just about physical endurance, it was about connections. The meeting. Frank O'Connor made his move during Eddie's second week. While Eddie scrubbed uniforms in a steaming vat, Frank strolled over, his hands casually tucked into his pockets. You're doing it wrong, Frank said, nodding at the soapy water. Eddie raised an eyebrow but didn't respond. Frank leaned against the wall, undeterred. You scrub like that, you'll tear your hands up before the week's out. Use the brush, not your knuckles. They don't care if you bleed, but you might. Eddie hesitated, then grabbed the brush hanging from a hook nearby. Thanks, he said, his voice cautious. Frank smirked. Don't mention it. Name's Frank, by the way. Eddie, he replied, keeping his eyes on his work. I know who you are, Frank said, his tone amused. Word travels fast in here. The banker who offed his wife and her boyfriend? Hell of a story. Eddie stiffened but didn't look up. I didn't do it. Of course you didn't, Frank said with a chuckle. None of us did. But here we are, wearing the same uniforms, eating the same slop. Makes you wonder if it matters. Eddie didn't reply, and Frank didn't press further. Instead, he changed the subject. You've got a rock hammer coming, Frank said. Eddie's head shot up. What? Frank grinned. Relax. It's not exactly a secret. You asked old Willie to smuggle one in, didn't you? Little tool for carving chess pieces. Eddie frowned. How do you know that? Frank shrugged. I know everything that comes and goes in this place. That's my business. If you want something, you come to me. Eddie studied Frank for a moment. The older man had a weathered face and a confident, easy demeanor. He seemed trustworthy, but Eddie had learned long ago not to take appearances at face value. I'll keep that in mind, Eddie said cautiously. You do that, Frank replied, giving Eddie a pat on the shoulder before walking away. The rock hammer. True to Frank's word, the rock hammer arrived 2 days later. Eddie found it hidden inside a loaf of bread in the mess hall. It was small, barely larger than his hand, with a wooden handle and a pointed steel head. To most, it would look like a harmless trinket. To Eddie, it was a lifeline. That evening, Eddie sat on his cot, turning the tool over in his hands. His cellmate, a wiry man named Harris, glanced over but said nothing. The unspoken rule in Blackstone was simple. Mind your own business. Eddie hid the hammer beneath his mattress, his mind already racing with possibilities. He wasn't sure what he would do with it yet, but he knew it would come in handy. The sisters. Not everyone was impressed by Eddie's quiet resilience. Reggie, Rex, Harland and his gang, the dogs, saw Eddie as an easy target. Rex cornered Eddie again a week later, this time in the showers. The room was a maze of steam and shadows, the sound of water echoing off the tile walls. Eddie was alone, a mistake he wouldn't make twice. "Carlyle," Rex drawled, stepping into Eddie's path. Two of his cronies flanked him, their expressions eager for violence. Eddie's heart pounded, but he forced himself to stay calm. "What do you want, Rex?" Rex grinned, his teeth yellow and crooked. "You've got a smart mouth for a dead man walking. That's what you are, you know. Dead meat." Before Eddie could respond, Rex lunged, slamming him against the wall. Pain exploded in Eddie's back, and he gasped for air. "You're gonna learn respect," Rex growled, his face inches from Eddie's. But before Rex could deliver another blow, a voice rang out. "That's enough, Rex." The room fell silent as Captain Victor Banks stepped into view. The burly guard carried himself with an air of authority, his hand resting on the baton at his side. Rex released Eddie and took a step back, his grin fading. "Just having a little fun, Captain." Banks's gaze hardened. "You want fun? You can spend the night in the hole. Move." Rex glared at Eddie but didn't argue. With a sharp whistle, he and his cronies disappeared into the steam. Banks turned to Eddie, his expression unreadable. "You all right?" Eddie nodded, wincing as he straightened. "I'll survive." "See that you do," Banks said before walking away. An uneasy alliance. Later that night, Eddie found Frank waiting for him in the mess hall. "You're lucky," Frank said, sliding a tin plate of food across the table. "Banks doesn't usually step in like that. Must have taken a shine to you." "Lucky," Eddie muttered, his ribs aching with every breath. Frank leaned in, his voice low. "Listen, Carlyle. You've got a brain, and that's rare around here. You want to survive. You need friends. Real friends." Eddie studied Frank's face. "And you're offering?" "Maybe," Frank said with a shrug. "I like to invest in people who show promise." "You've got something, Eddie. Don't let this place take it away." For the first time in weeks, Eddie allowed himself a small smile. "I'll think about it." Frank grinned. "That's all I ask." As the lights dimmed across the cell block, Eddie lay on his cot, staring at the cracked ceiling. Blackstone was a brutal, unforgiving place, but Eddie was beginning to understand its rules. He would need allies. He would need patience. And, above all, he would need hope. Hope was a fragile thing in Blackstone, but for Eddie Carlyle, it was enough. Chapter 3. An Unexpected Opportunity. The monotony of prison life was broken only by its moments of violence and chaos. For Edward Eddie Carlyle, those moments seemed to find him with unnerving regularity. But as the weeks turned into months, Eddie began to adapt, carefully navigating the treacherous social dynamics of Blackstone Penitentiary. By now, Eddie had established a cautious alliance with Franklin Frank O'Connor. Frank had become a guide of sorts, steering Eddie away from potential dangers and providing him with the occasional useful item smuggled into the prison. It wasn't friendship, at least, not yet, but it was a start. The Captain's Inheritance. One brisk morning in February 1949, Eddie found himself assigned to the outdoor work detail. It was backbreaking labor, shoveling snow from the prison courtyard while guards patrolled with rifles slung over their shoulders. Eddie's fingers were numb, his breath visible in the frigid air. Nearby, Captain Victor Banks stood with a group of guards, his voice carrying over the sound of scraping shovels. "Damn inheritance is costing me more than it's worth," Banks grumbled. Eddie paused mid-shovel, his ears perking up. He turned slightly, angling to hear more of the conversation. "They're taking a third of it in taxes," Banks continued, his face twisted in frustration. "I swear, you can't even die in peace without the government sticking its hand in your pocket." Eddie hesitated, weighing his options. Speaking up could draw unwanted attention, but the opportunity was too tempting to ignore. Taking a deep breath, he set down his shovel and approached the group. "Excuse me, Captain," Eddie said, his voice steady but respectful. "I couldn't help but overhear. Are you talking about estate taxes?" Banks turned, his expression a mix of surprise and irritation. "What's it to you, Carlyle?" "I used to be a banker," Eddie explained. "I might be able to help." The guards exchanged skeptical glances, but Banks's curiosity got the better of him. "You, a banker? What do you know about taxes?" Eddie straightened, brushing snow from his hands. I know there are legal ways to shelter your inheritance. Trusts, exemptions, even strategic gifting. If you give me the details, I could help you save a significant amount. Banks frowned, his skepticism evident. And why would you do that? Eddie met his gaze. Because it's better than shoveling snow. For a long moment, Banks said nothing, his eyes narrowing as he studied Eddie. Finally, he gestured toward the main building. Come with me. A new role. Eddie's encounter with Banks marked the beginning of a dramatic shift in his prison life. Over the next few days, Eddie reviewed the details of Banks's inheritance, scribbling calculations on scraps of paper during his limited free time. Despite the crude tools at his disposal, Eddie managed to devise a plan that would significantly reduce Banks's tax burden. When he presented his findings, Banks was visibly impressed. Well, I'll be damned, he muttered, shaking his head. You weren't lying about being a banker. Eddie allowed himself a small smile. Does this mean I'm done with the snow detail? Banks chuckled. I'll do you one better. The warden's always looking for men with brains. I'll put in a word for you. True to his word, Captain Banks arranged for Eddie to meet Warden Leonard Harper the following week. Harper was a tall, imposing man with graying hair and a cold, calculating demeanor. His office, lined with leather-bound books and framed certificates, exuded authority. So, you're the one who helped Banks with his taxes, Harper said, his voice clipped and formal. Yes, sir, Eddie replied, standing stiffly. Harper leaned back in his chair, steepling his fingers. What else can you do? Eddie hesitated, choosing his words carefully. I'm proficient in accounting and financial planning. I could help with the prison's finances, streamline operations, identify cost savings. Harper raised an eyebrow. And why should I trust you? Eddie met his gaze. Because I'm good at what I do. And because I have no reason to betray you. What would I gain from that? For a moment, Harper said nothing, his piercing eyes locked on Eddie. Then, with a nod, he made his decision. Very well. You'll be reassigned to the library. Officially, you'll assist with record-keeping. Unofficially, he leaned forward, his voice dropping to a conspiratorial tone. You'll help me with some sensitive financial matters. The library. The library was a relic of better times, a dusty, disorganized room filled with dog-eared books and broken furniture. It was overseen by Harold Harry Pritchard, an elderly inmate who had spent decades in Blackstone. Harry greeted Eddie with a toothless grin. Welcome to my kingdom, Harry said, gesturing at the cluttered shelves. It's not much, but it's home. Eddie quickly realized that the library's main purpose was a front. While he spent part of his day cataloging books and organizing inmate requests, his real work involved balancing ledgers and preparing reports for Warden Harper. It was tedious but manageable, and it came with certain privileges, extra rations, fewer work details, and a degree of protection from the guards. Rex's revenge. Not everyone was pleased with Eddie's new role. Reggie Rex Harland, still nursing his grudge, saw Eddie's reassignment as a personal insult. One evening, as Eddie made his way back to his cell, Rex and two of his cronies cornered him in a dimly lit hallway. You think you're better than us, don't you, Carlyle? Rex sneered, cracking his knuckles. Eddie's pulse quickened, but he forced himself to remain calm. I'm just doing my job, Rex. Your job, Rex spat, stepping closer. Your job is to know your place. Before Rex could make his move, a shout echoed down the hall. Break it up. Frank appeared, flanked by two other inmates. His presence was enough to make Rex hesitate. This isn't over, Carlyle, Rex growled, backing away. Not by a long shot. As Rex disappeared into the shadows, Frank turned to Eddie. You all right? Eddie nodded, though his hands were trembling. Thanks. Don't mention it, Frank said, clapping him on the shoulder. But you owe me one. A glimmer of hope. Over the next few weeks, Eddie settled into his new routine. He found solace in the quiet hours spent in the library, surrounded by books that offered a brief escape from the grim reality of Blackstone. Slowly, he began to feel a sense of purpose, a glimmer of hope that had been absent since his conviction. But Eddie knew better than to let his guard down. Blackstone was a dangerous place, and hope was a fragile thing. Still, as he sat in the library one evening, thumbing through a worn copy of The Count of Monte Cristo, he allowed himself to dream of a future beyond the prison walls. And for the first time in a long time, He believed it might be possible. Chapter 4. The Library Transformation. The Blackstone Library was not much to look at. Its shelves were crooked, its books old and tattered, and its only patrons were the occasional inmates looking for a way to pass the time. When Eddie Carlyle first stepped into the dimly lit room, he saw not just a space for improvement, but a chance to build something meaningful. For Harold Harry Pritchard, the elderly inmate who had run the library for over 20 years, Eddie's arrival was both a relief and a challenge. Harry, frail but sharp, had kept the library functional despite minimal resources. Now, with Eddie's fresh energy and sharp mind, the library became more than just a forgotten corner of the prison. Building a vision. Eddie spent his first weeks in the library getting to know its patrons, or rather, the lack thereof. Most inmates saw the library as a pointless endeavor, a relic of a world that had no place inside Blackstone's grim walls. Eddie understood their skepticism. After all, what good were books to men serving life sentences? Still, Eddie believed the library could be more. He began by organizing the shelves, categorizing the books by genre and condition. Many were falling apart, their spines broken, their pages yellowed with age. Eddie salvaged what he could, discarding the hopeless cases and making lists of what needed replacing. "You're wasting your time," Harry said one afternoon as Eddie meticulously repaired a torn atlas with tape. "Nobody cares about this place but me.
And now you, I guess."
"They will," Eddie replied without looking up. "Once they see what it can offer." Harry chuckled, shaking his head. "You've got the stubbornness of a mule, Carlyle."
"I'll give you that."
Letters to the legislature. Eddie's ambitions extended beyond Blackstone's walls. Using his limited access to the warden's office, he began writing letters to the state legislature, requesting funding to improve the library. It was a long shot, but Eddie was nothing if not persistent. Every week, he sent a new letter, carefully typed and addressed to various state officials. He described the potential benefits of an expanded library, arguing that it could rehabilitate inmates and reduce recidivism. The letters were often met with silence, but Eddie refused to give up.
"Why do you even bother?"
Frank O'Connor asked one evening as he helped Eddie file library cards. "You really think a bunch of suits in Augusta care about a prison library?"
Eddie shrugged.
"Probably not. But if you ask enough times, someone's bound to listen."
Frank smirked.
"You're either an optimist or a lunatic."
"Maybe both," Eddie said with a small smile.
Earning respect. Eddie's efforts in the library did not go unnoticed. Over time, more inmates began to visit, drawn by the quiet space and the growing selection of books. Eddie took the time to talk to each visitor, recommending titles and encouraging them to explore new genres. For many, it was their first exposure to literature. Eddie introduced them to the works of Charles Dickens, Mark Twain, and Ernest Hemingway. He even managed to get a few copies of Popular Mechanics, which proved especially popular among the more pragmatic inmates. "Got anything on cars?" one inmate asked one afternoon, his hands calloused from years in the prison workshop. Eddie handed him a worn manual on engine repair.
"Try this."
The man flipped through the pages, his expression softening.
"Thanks."
Moments like these fueled Eddie's determination. He knew the library couldn't fix Blackstone's broken system, but it could offer a small glimmer of hope, a reminder that life didn't have to end within these walls. The warden's agenda. While Eddie focused on the library, Warden Leonard Harper had other plans. The library, in his eyes, was not a place for rehabilitation but a convenient cover for his growing web of corruption. Harper had begun funneling money through prison accounts, using Eddie's financial expertise to keep the books balanced and the auditors satisfied. "You're doing good work, Carlyle," Harper said one day as he handed Eddie another ledger to review. "Keep this up, and you might actually make yourself useful around here." Eddie said nothing, his jaw tightening as he took the ledger. He hated being complicit in Harper's schemes, but he knew better than to refuse. Blackstone was a place where survival often meant compromising your principles. Still, Eddie kept meticulous records, carefully separating Harper's illicit dealings from the legitimate transactions. He had no illusions about Harper's morality, but he wasn't about to let the warden drag him down any further than necessary. The first success. After months of relentless letter writing, Eddie finally received a response from the state legislature. A small grant had been approved to improve Blackstone's library, a modest sum, but enough to purchase new books and repair the crumbling shelves. When the shipment of books arrived,
Eddie and Harry spent an entire day unpacking and organizing the new titles. The library was still far from perfect, but it was beginning to feel like a real library, a place where ideas could flourish, even in the most unlikely of settings.
"You did it," Harry said, his voice tinged with admiration.
"I didn't think you'd pull it off." Eddie smiled, wiping sweat from his brow.
"One step at a time, Harry. One step at a time. A new chapter."
The arrival of new books brought new life to the library. Inmates who had never picked up a book before found themselves drawn to the shelves, curious about the stories and knowledge they contained. Eddie took pride in helping them discover new worlds, even if only for a few hours at a time. But Eddie's success also drew the attention of those who saw the library as a threat. Rex Harland, still nursing his grudge, began spreading rumors that Eddie was using the library to curry favor with the guards.
"He's just a snake in a suit," Rex sneered during a card game in the mess hall.
"Thinks he's better than the rest of us."
Frank, who was sitting nearby, leaned forward.
"You've got it all wrong, Rex. Eddie's one of the good ones."
Rex smirked.
"We'll see about that.
A moment of rebellion." One evening, as Eddie was locking up the library, he stumbled across an unexpected delivery, a box containing a record of the marriage of Figaro. The warden had included it as a token of goodwill, though Eddie suspected it was more for show than genuine support. Curious, Eddie borrowed the prison's PA system and played the record for the entire cell block. As the soaring notes filled the air, the inmates froze, their conversations and arguments falling silent. For a few precious minutes, the prison's grim walls seemed to melt away, replaced by the beauty of Mozart's music. The moment didn't last. When Warden Harper found out, he sent Eddie to solitary confinement for a week, accusing him of disrupting order. But Eddie didn't regret it. For those few minutes, he had given the inmates something they hadn't had in years, a sense of freedom. As Eddie sat in his dark, silent cell, he thought about the journey that had brought him here. Blackstone was a place designed to break men, but Eddie was determined to bend without breaking. The library was his sanctuary, his rebellion, and his hope. And as long as he had hope, he had a reason to keep fighting.
Chapter 5. Harry's Departure. The library had become Eddie Carlyle's lifeline, a refuge in the chaos of Blackstone. Over time, the once empty room began to fill with inmates eager for a temporary escape from the grim monotony of prison life. For Eddie, it was a small but significant victory, proof that even in the darkest places, hope could take root. But no victory in Blackstone came without its share of losses.
Harry's last days.
Harold Harry Pritchard had spent over 50 years in Blackstone Penitentiary. To most, he was an institution in his own right, a wiry, white-haired man with a crooked smile and a sharp wit. But the years had worn him down, and his once bright eyes were clouded with fatigue. Eddie had grown fond of Harry during their time in the library. The older man was a fountain of stories about the prison's history, each tale a blend of humor and tragedy. But in recent weeks, Harry had grown quieter, his movements slower. Eddie noticed the change, but Harry dismissed it with a wave of his hand.
"Just old age catching up with me," Harry said one afternoon as he shelved books with trembling fingers.
"Nothing to worry about."
Eddie wasn't convinced, but he respected Harry's pride. Instead of pressing the issue, he took on more of the library's duties, allowing Harry to rest when he needed to. Then one morning, the news came: Harry had been granted parole. A world beyond the walls. The announcement came as a surprise to everyone, including Harry himself. For decades, he had resigned himself to the idea of dying within Blackstone's walls. Now, at the age of 74, he was being offered a chance to re-enter the world he had left behind.
"You're free," Eddie said with a smile as he handed Harry a stack of books to catalog.
"Isn't that what you've been waiting for?"
Harry didn't respond immediately. He ran a finger along the spine of a book, his expression distant.
"Free," he echoed, his voice barely above a whisper.
"That's a funny word, isn't it? 50 years ago, I'd have given anything to hear it.
Now," he trailed off, shaking his head,
"now I'm not so sure."
Eddie frowned.
"What do you mean?"
Harry sighed, sinking into a chair. "The world out there isn't the same world I left behind.
Hell, I'm not the same man I was back then. I wouldn't even know where to start."
Eddie sat across from him, his tone gentle.
"You'll figure it out, Harry. You're smarter than most of the men in here. And you've got a lifetime of stories to share."
Harry chuckled, though there was little humor in it. "Stories won't pay the rent, kid. A farewell." The night before Harry's release, the library was quieter than usual. Eddie stayed late, helping Harry pack his few belongings: a pair of worn shoes, a Bible with frayed edges, and a small stack of letters he had written over the years but never sent. "Promise me you'll take care of this place," Harry said as he handed Eddie a set of keys. "It's not much, but it's the only thing keeping some of these men sane." "I promise," Eddie said, his voice firm. For a moment, Harry hesitated, as if searching for the right words. Then he extended a hand. "You're a good man, Carlyle. Don't let this place change that." Eddie shook his hand, his chest tight. "Take care of yourself out there, Harry." "I'll try," Harry said with a faint smile. "No guarantees, though. A world unforgiving." Harry's departure was marked by little fanfare. A guard escorted him through the gates, where he was given a small sum of money and a bus ticket to Portland. The other inmates watched from a distance, some cheering, others silently envious. Eddie stood in the library window, his expression unreadable. Days turned into weeks, and life in Blackstone moved on. Eddie focused on his work, expanding the library and mentoring younger inmates who showed an interest in reading. But in the back of his mind, he couldn't stop thinking about Harry. Then the news came. The letter. It arrived in the form of a crumpled note, delivered to Eddie by one of the guards. The handwriting was shaky but unmistakable. It was from Harry.
"Eddie, I tried. I really did. But this world isn't made for men like me anymore. Everything's changed, and I don't know how to keep up. I thought I'd find freedom out here, but all I found was emptiness. You were right about one thing, though. Hope is a powerful thing. It got me through 50 years in Blackstone. But out here, I don't know what to hope for anymore. Take care of yourself, kid. Keep that hope alive. And take care of the library. It's the only thing worth a damn in that place." Harry's name was signed at the bottom, but the letter offered no clue as to where he was. Eddie's heart sank as he read the words. He didn't need to be told what had happened. He could picture it clearly. Harry, alone in a boarding house, unable to find his footing in a world that had moved on without him. The noose, the chair, the final step. A lesson in loss. Harry's death hit Eddie harder than he expected. It was a stark reminder of the fragility of hope and the brutal reality of life both inside and outside the prison walls. For days, Eddie kept to himself, retreating into the library and avoiding the other inmates. "You all right?" Frank asked one evening as he found Eddie sitting alone at a desk. Eddie looked up, his eyes hollow.
"Just thinking about Harry," Frank guessed.
Eddie nodded.
"He deserved better."
Frank sat down, folding his hands on the table.
"We all do. But life doesn't care about what we deserve, does it? You just gotta keep moving forward."
Eddie sighed, running a hand through his hair. "Sometimes it feels like hope is a curse." Frank shook his head.
"No.
Despair's the curse. Hope's what keeps you alive, carrying the torch." In the weeks that followed, Eddie threw himself into his work with renewed determination. He expanded the library's collection, organized literacy programs, and even started teaching a few inmates how to read. It was his way of honoring Harry's memory, a tribute to the man who had kept the library alive for so many years. And though Harry was gone, his influence lingered in every corner of the library. The shelves he had repaired, the books he had mended, and the stories he had shared were all reminders of the legacy he had left behind. Eddie vowed to protect that legacy, no matter what it took. As the days turned into months, Eddie found solace in the library, in the quiet moments when he could lose himself in a book or help an inmate discover a new passion. It wasn't freedom, not in the traditional sense. But it was enough. And for now, enough was all he needed. Chapter 6. Notes of Rebellion. By the spring of 1955, Eddie Carlyle had transformed the Blackstone Library into a sanctuary. Its shelves were lined with books spanning everything from classics to technical manuals, and the room buzzed with the quiet energy of men who, for a brief time, could escape the weight of their sentences. The library had become Eddie's domain, but it was more than that. It was a symbol of defiance, a testament to what could thrive even in the harshest of conditions. But Blackstone was not a place that allowed symbols of hope to flourish easily, and Eddie's growing influence was beginning to attract the wrong kind of attention. The delivery. One damp afternoon, Eddie was unpacking a shipment of new books donated by a local charity when he discovered something unusual. At the bottom of the box was a record, its sleeve worn but intact. The title caught his eye, The Marriage of Figaro by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Eddie studied the record, his fingers tracing the faded lettering. Music had always been a rare commodity in Blackstone, limited to the occasional hum of a guard's radio. The idea of bringing Mozart's soaring melodies into the grim prison walls felt almost revolutionary. He glanced at the small PA system mounted near the library's entrance. It was used sparingly, mostly for announcements, but Eddie wondered, could it be used for something more? A risk worth taking. The decision to play the record didn't come easily. Eddie knew the rules. Using the PA system without permission was strictly forbidden, and Warden Harper was not known for his leniency. But the more Eddie thought about it, the more the idea consumed him. That evening, Eddie approached Frank O'Connor, who was sitting at a corner table in the library, flipping through a battered copy of Mice and Men. Frank, Eddie said, setting the record on the table. What do you think about a little music? Frank raised an eyebrow. Music? In this place? You've got a death wish, Carlyle. Maybe, Eddie admitted. But don't you think it's worth it? Just for a few minutes. Frank leaned back in his chair, studying Eddie's face. You really believe a couple of notes from some old composer are gonna change anything? Not everything, Eddie said. But maybe something. After a long pause, Frank sighed. You're crazy, you know that? But if anyone can pull it off, it's you. The music. The following afternoon, when the guards were distracted during a routine inspection, Eddie seized his chance. He slipped into the small room housing the PA system and carefully placed the record on the turntable. His hands trembled slightly as he lowered the needle, but he forced himself to focus. The first notes of The Marriage of Figaro filled the air, crisp and triumphant. The sound echoed through the cell blocks, spilling into the yard and even reaching the mess hall. Conversations stopped mid-sentence as inmates turned toward the speakers, their faces a mix of confusion and wonder. For a few precious minutes, the oppressive atmosphere of Blackstone seemed to lift. The music was like a breath of fresh air, reminding the men of a world beyond the walls. Some closed their eyes, letting the notes carry them away, while others simply stood in stunned silence. Eddie watched from the library, a small smile tugging at his lips. For the first time in years, Blackstone felt alive. The consequences. The music ended as abruptly as it began. Moments later, the guards stormed into the library, their faces red with fury. Carlyle, one of them barked. You're coming with us. Eddie didn't resist as they grabbed him by the arms and marched him toward solitary confinement. He caught a glimpse of Frank watching from the doorway, his expression unreadable. In the tiny windowless cell, Eddie sat on the cold concrete floor, his mind replaying the scene over and over. The punishment didn't matter. What mattered was the impact the music had made. For a brief moment, he had given the inmates something Blackstone rarely allowed, hope. A divided response. The fallout from Eddie's rebellion rippled through the prison. Some inmates praised him for his courage, calling him a hero. Others, wary of the consequences, muttered that he was foolish for risking solitary over a song. You're lucky they didn't throw you in the hole for a month, Frank said when Eddie returned to the library a week later, looking thinner but no less determined. Maybe, Eddie said, resuming his work as though nothing had happened. But it was worth it. Frank shook his head, a mixture of admiration and exasperation in his eyes. You're something else, Carlyle. The warden's warning. Eddie's defiance did not go unnoticed by Warden Leonard Harper. A few days after his release from solitary, Eddie was summoned to the warden's office. Harper was sitting behind his massive desk, his expression cold and calculating. Do you know what you've done, Carlyle? I played a record, Eddie said evenly. You disrupted the order of this institution, Harper snapped. You think these men need hope? Hope is a dangerous thing in a place like this. It breeds discontent, rebellion. Eddie met the warden's gaze, his voice calm but firm. With all due respect, sir, hope is the only thing keeping some of these men alive. Harper leaned back in his chair, a faint smirk on his lips. You're clever, Carlyle. But don't mistake cleverness for invincibility. You've got a good thing going here, a cushy job, privileges most men would kill for. Don't throw it away. Eddie nodded, sensing the unspoken threat. Understood, sir. A ripple of change. Despite Harper's warning, Eddie's act of rebellion had a lasting impact. The inmates began to see him not just as the man who ran the library, but as a symbol of resistance. Attendance in the library surged, and Eddie used the momentum to expand his programs, introducing discussion groups and writing workshops. For Eddie, the library became more than a sanctuary, it became a movement. Each book checked out, each conversation sparked, was another crack in the prison's oppressive walls. Frank's perspective. One evening, as Eddie and Frank sat alone in the library, Frank broke the silence. "You know, you've got them all looking up to you now," Frank said, gesturing toward the shelves. "The librarian, the rebel, the savior.
It's a hell of a lot to carry." Eddie leaned back in his chair, his gaze distant.
"I'm not trying to be a savior, Frank. I just want to make this place a little less hopeless." Frank chuckled.
"Well, you're doing a damn good job of it. Just don't forget to save a little hope for yourself."
Eddie smiled faintly but didn't reply. Deep down, he knew Frank was right. The burden of hope was a heavy one, but it was a burden Eddie was willing to bear. As the days turned into weeks, Eddie continued to push the boundaries of what was possible within Blackstone. The music might have been silenced, but the echoes of rebellion lingered, fueling a quiet revolution. And for the first time, Eddie began to believe that freedom, true freedom, might not be so far out of reach. Chapter 7. Corruption and Power. By 1963, Eddie Carlyle's role in Blackstone Penitentiary had evolved far beyond the library. What had started as a quiet rebellion against the grim monotony of prison life had turned into a position of subtle influence. But in a place like Blackstone, influence often came at a price. Warden Leonard Harper, ever the opportunist, had expanded his prison labor scheme into a profitable empire. Using inmates as a cheap workforce, Harper undercut local businesses, accepting bribes from contractors who benefited from the cut-rate labor. The warden's operation ran like clockwork, and at the center of it all was Eddie Carlyle. A necessary compromise. Eddie's talent for numbers and organization had made him indispensable to Harper. Under the guise of managing the prison's legitimate finances, Eddie was tasked with laundering the bribes and kickbacks Harper received. It was a job Eddie despised, but refusing would have meant losing the small freedoms he had fought so hard to secure. "Think of it as a partnership," Harper had said during one of their many meetings in his office. "You keep my books clean, and I'll make sure you keep your cushy spot in the library. It's a win-win." Eddie didn't see it that way, but he nodded, knowing full well the consequences of defiance. The warden's reach extended far beyond the prison walls, and Eddie had no doubt Harper would make good on his threats if pushed. Still, Eddie kept meticulous records, creating a paper trail that could one day expose Harper's corruption. It was a dangerous game, but one Eddie played with quiet determination. The price of loyalty. Harper's scheme was not without its critics. Captain Victor Banks, once an ally of Eddie's, had grown increasingly uneasy with the warden's methods. As a career officer with a sense of justice, however skewed, Banks saw the prison's labor program as an abuse of power. One evening, Banks confronted Eddie in the library. The room was empty except for the two of them, the faint hum of the overhead lights casting a harsh glow. "You've got yourself tangled in something ugly, Carlyle," Banks said, his voice low but firm. "I've seen the numbers. I know what Harper's doing." Eddie set down the ledger he had been working on and met Banks's gaze. "And what do you want me to do about it?"
"You think I have a choice?"
"You always have a choice," Banks replied. "You just have to be willing to face the consequences." Eddie shook his head, his frustration evident. "And what about the consequences for everyone else? The men in this prison depend on me, on the library, on the programs I've built. If I go down, they lose everything." Banks sighed, rubbing the back of his neck. "You're a good man, Carlyle. But don't let Harper drag you down with him. The expansion." Harper's greed knew no bounds. Under his direction, the prison labor program expanded into new industries, from road construction to textile manufacturing. The profits flowed in, and Harper became more emboldened, flaunting his wealth in subtle but telling ways. A new watch, an expensive suit, a car parked just outside the prison gates. Eddie watched it all with a mixture of disgust and calculation. He knew Harper's hubris would be his downfall. It was only a matter of time. But for now, Eddie played his part, carefully balancing his compliance with quiet acts of defiance. One such act came when Harper ordered Eddie to cut funding for the library in favor of expanding the labor program. Eddie found creative ways to divert funds back to the library, ensuring its survival even as Harper tightened his grip on the prison. "You're walking a fine line," Frank O'Connor warned one evening as he helped Eddie shelve books.
"Harper's not stupid. He'll catch on eventually."
Eddie smirked.
"Let him. By the time he does, it'll be too late."
The inmate union. As Harper's labor scheme grew, so did resentment among the inmates. The long hours, harsh conditions, and lack of compensation had pushed many to their breaking point. A group of inmates, led by a charismatic man named Darnell Hayes, began organizing a quiet resistance. Darnell approached Eddie one day in the library, his voice low and urgent.
"We need your help, Carlisle. You've got influence in this place. If you back us, the others will follow."
Eddie hesitated. While he sympathized with their cause, he knew the risks of openly opposing Harper.
"What exactly are you asking for?"
"Better conditions. Fair treatment. We're not asking for much, just some damn dignity." Eddie considered his options, weighing the potential fallout. Finally, he nodded.
"I'll do what I can."
A spark of rebellion. Eddie's involvement in the resistance was subtle but impactful. He used his access to Harper's records to identify weak points in the labor program, quietly sabotaging operations and leaking information to the inmates. The resistance grew stronger, their demands louder, until Harper could no longer ignore them. The warden responded with predictable ruthlessness, ordering crackdowns and solitary confinement for the ringleaders. But the seeds of rebellion had already been sown, and Eddie knew it was only a matter of time before they bore fruit. A private warning. One evening, Harper summoned Eddie to his office. The warden was in a rare mood, his face flushed with anger as he slammed a folder onto his desk.
"You think I don't know what you're doing?"
Harper snarled.
"I see the numbers. I know you've been playing games with my books."
Eddie remained calm, folding his hands in his lap.
"I've done everything you've asked, sir. If there's an issue, I'd be happy to explain."
"Don't play coy with me, Carlisle," Harper snapped. "I've given you a lot of leeway in this place.
Don't make me regret it."
Eddie met Harper's glare, his voice steady.
"I think we both know what would happen if you did."
The tension in the room was palpable, but Harper finally leaned back, a begrudging smirk on his face.
"You've got guts, I'll give you that. But don't push your luck."
A glimmer of hope. Despite the growing tension, Eddie continued his work, both in the library and behind the scenes. He knew the road ahead would be dangerous, but he also knew it was worth the risk. Blackstone was a place designed to break men, but Eddie had found a way to bend without breaking. As he sat in the library one evening, surrounded by the quiet hum of turning pages, Eddie allowed himself a moment of reflection. The path he had chosen was fraught with danger, but it was also filled with purpose. And for Eddie Carlisle, that was enough. Chapter 8. The Newcomer. By the summer of 1965, Eddie Carlisle's life in Blackstone had settled into an uneasy rhythm. He had become both a fixture of the library and an unspoken leader among the inmates. His calculated defiance of Warden Harper and subtle support of the growing resistance had earned him respect, but also scrutiny. It was a delicate balancing act, and Eddie knew it would only take one misstep to bring it all crashing down. It was during this tense period that a young man named Johnny Wells entered Eddie's life, bringing with him both hope and danger. A fresh face. Johnny Wells arrived at Blackstone on a sweltering July afternoon, his sharp features and wiry frame standing out among the line of new inmates. He was barely in his 20s, but his confident stride and cocky grin suggested he was no stranger to trouble. Frank O'Connor noticed him first. "Fresh fish," he muttered to Eddie as they watched from the library's window. "That one's gonna stir things up, mark my words." Eddie studied Johnny, his keen eyes noting the way the young man surveyed the yard with a mix of curiosity and bravado.
"He's young," Eddie said. "Might just be looking to survive."
Frank snorted. "Surviving and thriving are two different things. I'd bet my last cigarette he's here to thrive." An unexpected encounter. It didn't take long for Johnny to make his presence known. Within days of his arrival, he had already clashed with the guards and charmed a small circle of fellow inmates. His quick wit and fearless attitude earned him both admiration and enemies. Eddie first met Johnny in the library, where the young man strolled in with an air of casual confidence. He sauntered up to the counter, tapping his fingers on the wood.
"You Carlisle?" Johnny asked, his voice smooth but edged with curiosity.
That depends, Eddie replied without looking up from the book he was cataloging.
Who's asking?
Name's Johnny Wells. Heard you're the guy to see if someone wants to learn a thing or two. Eddie glanced up, raising an eyebrow.
Learn what?
Whatever you've got, Johnny said with a grin. Books, advice, secrets. I'm an open book myself, so I figure it's only fair to crack open a few others. Frank, sitting nearby, chuckled.
You've got guts, kid. I'll give you that.
Eddie leaned back in his chair, studying Johnny.
What do you want, Wells?
Johnny shrugged. Just a place to start. Figured I'd try this whole library thing. Beats breaking rocks in the yard. After a moment, Eddie nodded.
Fair enough.
Grab a book, and we'll see if you stick around. A growing bond. To Eddie's surprise, Johnny became a regular in the library. He devoured books on everything from history to mechanics, his hunger for knowledge as intense as his need to prove himself. Eddie took the young man under his wing, offering guidance and answering his endless questions.
Why are you helping me?
Johnny asked one afternoon as he sat at a table piled high with books.
What's in it for you?
Eddie smiled faintly. Because someone once helped me when I didn't know what I was doing.
Consider it paying it forward.
Johnny frowned, as if trying to process the idea of altruism.
Well, thanks. Not many people in this place give a damn.
Don't thank me yet, Eddie said. You've still got a lot to learn.
A shocking revelation.
As their bond grew, Johnny began to open up about his past. One evening, as the two worked late in the library, he shared a story that would change everything. I had a cellmate back in county, Johnny said, his tone casual but tinged with something deeper.
Real piece of work. Always bragging about the things he'd done.
Eddie glanced up, curious.
What kind of things?
Johnny leaned forward, lowering his voice.
Murders.
Guy claimed he killed a man and his wife up in Portland a few years back. Said he got away clean, too.
Eddie froze, his pulse quickening. What did he say exactly?
Johnny frowned, trying to recall the details.
Said the husband got framed.
A banker or something.
Swore up and down he was innocent.
Guess the guy's rotting away in here now. The room went silent, the weight of Johnny's words hanging heavy in the air. Eddie's mind raced, piecing together the implications.
Could this be the break he had been waiting for?
Do you remember his name? Eddie asked, his voice tight.
Who?
Johnny asked.
The guy, the one who confessed.
Johnny shook his head.
Nah, just called him Slim. Don't think I ever knew his real name.
A ray of hope. That night, Eddie couldn't sleep. Johnny's story had reignited a spark of hope he hadn't felt in years. If Slim's confession could be verified, it might be enough to clear Eddie's name and secure his release. But the path ahead was fraught with uncertainty. Would Warden Harper allow such a revelation to disrupt his carefully controlled empire? And even if Eddie could prove his innocence, what would freedom look like after so many years behind bars? Eddie shared the story with Frank the next morning, his voice low as they worked in the library.
You believe him?
Frank asked, his expression skeptical.
I don't know, Eddie admitted. But if there's even a chance he's telling the truth, I have to try.
Frank sighed, rubbing the back of his neck.
Be careful, Carlisle.
Hope's a dangerous thing in this place. Eddie nodded, a faint smile tugging at his lips.
I know. But sometimes it's all we have.
A plan takes shape. Over the next few weeks, Eddie began laying the groundwork to investigate Slim's confession. He reached out to old contacts, using his limited resources to gather information. At the same time, he continued mentoring Johnny, who seemed unaware of the storm he had unleashed. Thanks for sticking your neck out for me, Johnny said one day as they sorted through a stack of donated books.
Don't know why you bother.
Because you're worth it, Eddie said simply. Johnny frowned, as if unsure how to respond.
You're a weird guy, Carlisle. But I guess I like that.
Eddie chuckled. I'll take that as a compliment. As the weeks turned into months, Eddie's plan began to take shape. The path ahead was uncertain, but for the first time in years, Eddie felt the faintest glimmer of hope. And in Blackstone Penitentiary, hope was a rare and precious thing. Chapter 9. Betrayal. The revelation Johnny Wells shared weighed heavily on Eddie Carlisle's mind. The possibility of clearing his name, once a faint glimmer in the distant haze of despair, now felt tantalizingly close.
But in Blackstone Penitentiary, nothing came without risk. Eddie knew that pursuing the truth could put him in direct conflict with Warden Harper and his iron grip on the prison. Eddie decided to tread carefully. The stakes had never been higher. The first step. Eddie began his investigation quietly. He reached out to a sympathetic guard, Officer Jacobs, who occasionally turned a blind eye to Eddie's activities in exchange for small favors. Eddie needed information, prison records, transfers, anything that could identify Slim, the man Johnny claimed had confessed to the murders. "Why do you want this?" Jacobs asked one evening as Eddie handed him a carefully folded note with specific details. "Let's just say it's personal," Eddie replied. "Can you help me or not?" Jacobs frowned, clearly uneasy. "I'll see what I can do. But if Harper finds out..." "He won't," Eddie said, his voice firm. "I'll make sure of it." A fracture in the alliance. Meanwhile, Johnny remained unaware of the storm brewing around him. The young inmate had become a regular in the library, soaking up knowledge and forming a bond with Eddie that resembled a mentor-student relationship. But Johnny's brash nature made him reckless, and that recklessness soon drew unwanted attention. Rex Harland, still nursing his grudge against Eddie, had taken notice of Johnny's rising status. To Rex, the young man was an easy target, a way to hurt Eddie without directly confronting him. One afternoon, as Johnny returned from the yard, Rex cornered him near the mess hall. "Heard you've been spending a lot of time with Carlisle," Rex sneered, blocking Johnny's path. "What's he got you doing?" "Running errands. Carrying his books." Johnny squared his shoulders, refusing to back down. "None of your damn business, Rex." Rex chuckled darkly. "You've got guts, kid. I'll give you that. But guts won't save you when things go south. And trust me, they will." A fatal mistake. Unbeknownst to Eddie, Warden Harper had already begun to suspect that something was amiss. His network of informants had reported Eddie's growing influence in the prison, as well as the whispers of his investigation into Slim's confession. Harper, ever the pragmatist, decided to send a message. Johnny became the unwitting pawn in Harper's game. One evening, he was pulled from his cell under the pretense of an interrogation about a minor infraction. Johnny, cocky as ever, assumed it was a routine scare tactic. Instead, Harper himself greeted Johnny in the dimly lit office. "Mr. Wells," Harper said, his tone deceptively cordial. "I hear you've been spending a lot of time with Mr. Carlisle. Care to tell me why?" Johnny hesitated, sensing the trap. "I'm just reading books, sir. Carlisle's a smart guy. Figured I could learn something." Harper leaned forward, his piercing gaze locking onto Johnny's. "You're lying. And lying to me is a very bad idea. The escape attempt." The next morning, the prison was abuzz with shocking news. Johnny Wells had been shot and killed during an attempted escape. The official report claimed that Johnny had overpowered a guard and tried to climb the outer fence, but few believed the story. The inmates knew better. This was no escape. It was an execution. Eddie was devastated. Johnny's death hit him harder than he expected, a cruel reminder of how fragile life was in Blackstone. But beneath the grief was a simmering anger, a realization that Harper had struck a blow to keep Eddie in line. Frank found Eddie sitting alone in the library that evening, his head in his hands. "It's not your fault," Frank said, his voice quiet but firm. "You couldn't have stopped it." Eddie looked up, his eyes burning with determination. "I should have protected him. He trusted me." Frank sat down across from him. "Harper wanted to send a message. But you're still standing, Carlisle. That means you've got a choice to make. A showdown with Harper." 2 days later, Eddie was summoned to Warden Harper's office. The warden greeted him with a thin smile, his hands folded neatly on the desk. "Terrible tragedy. What happened to young Mr. Wells?" Harper said, his tone dripping with insincerity. "But you know how these things go. Sometimes men just can't handle prison life." Eddie met Harper's gaze, his voice cold. "You killed him." Harper's smile faded. "Careful, Carlisle. That's a serious accusation. You think I don't know what you're doing?" Eddie continued, his voice rising. "You use this place to line your pockets, and you kill anyone who threatens your control. But you're not as untouchable as you think." Harper's expression darkened. "You'd do well to remember your place, Carlisle. I've been lenient with you because you're useful. Don't make me regret it." Eddie stood,
his fists clenched. "Do whatever you want, Harper. But I won't stop until the truth comes out." As Eddie left the office, he felt a surge of determination. Harper might have won this round, but the fight was far from over. A renewed resolve. Johnny's death became a rallying cry for the inmates. Though fear lingered in the air, so did a growing sense of defiance. Eddie channeled his grief into action, redoubling his efforts to uncover the truth about Slim and Harper's corruption. In the quiet of the library, Eddie began compiling evidence, documents, notes, and testimonies from inmates who had suffered under Harper's regime. It was a dangerous gamble, but Eddie knew it was the only way to honor Johnny's memory. Frank watched from the sidelines, his admiration for Eddie tempered by concern. "You're playing with fire, Carlyle," he said one evening as they sorted through a new shipment of books. "Harper won't go down without a fight." Eddie nodded, his expression grim.
"I know.
But I'm not stopping now." As the weeks passed, the tension in Blackstone reached a boiling point. Harper's control over the prison was slipping, and Eddie's quiet rebellion was gaining momentum. The road ahead was fraught with danger, but Eddie had made his choice. He would fight. For Johnny. For the truth. And for the hope of freedom. Chapter 10. A Plan Takes Shape. The death of Johnny Wells marked a turning point for Eddie Carlyle. It was a reminder that time in Blackstone wasn't just a test of survival, it was a war against the forces that sought to crush him. Warden Harper's oppressive control and Johnny's senseless murder left Eddie with no illusions about what he was up against. The time for passive resistance was over. Eddie needed a plan. The first step. Eddie spent weeks quietly assembling the tools he would need. He worked late nights in the library, poring over every ledger, every record, and every transaction Harper had involved him in. The warden's greed had left a paper trail, and Eddie meticulously documented every piece of evidence. Each page he copied and hid became a weapon in his growing arsenal. Frank O'Connor watched with a mixture of concern and curiosity. "You're up to something," he said one evening, leaning against the library counter.
"Care to let me in on it?"
Eddie glanced at him but said nothing. "Come on, Carlyle," Frank pressed. "You and I both know Harper's not the kind of guy you mess with lightly. Whatever you're planning, it's gonna get messy." Eddie sighed, setting down his pen. "It already is, Frank. I'm just making sure I come out on the other side of it." Recruiting allies. If Eddie was going to bring down Harper, he couldn't do it alone. He needed allies, men who shared his grievances and were willing to take risks. Frank was the obvious first choice, but Eddie also reached out to Darnell Hayes, the leader of the inmate resistance group. Darnell was skeptical at first. "You think you can take down Harper? The guy's got half the guards in his pocket." "I don't need to take him down by force," Eddie explained. "I just need to expose him. Once the state sees what he's been doing, they'll have no choice but to act." "And you think they'll listen to a bunch of cons?" Darnell asked, folding his arms. "They'll listen when we show them the evidence," Eddie said firmly.
"But I can't do it without your help."
After a long pause, Darnell nodded.
"Fine. I'm in.
But if this backfires, we're all screwed. The package." Eddie's plan revolved around a single critical piece, a package containing copies of the ledgers and incriminating documents he had compiled. He needed to get it out of Blackstone without arousing suspicion. For that, he turned to Officer Jacobs, the same guard who had helped him gather information about Slim. "This is asking a lot, Carlyle," Jacobs said when Eddie approached him with the package.
"If I get caught..."
"You won't," Eddie interrupted. "All you have to do is drop it in the mail. No return address, no explanation. Just send it to this lawyer." He handed Jacobs a slip of paper with the name and address of a public defender who had once worked on Eddie's case. Jacobs hesitated, then nodded.
"Fine.
But this is the last favor, understand?" "Understood," Eddie said, his tone serious.
"And thank you."
The countdown begins. With the package en route, Eddie knew it was only a matter of time before Harper realized what was happening. The warden had grown increasingly paranoid in recent weeks, doubling the number of guards on patrol and conducting random cell searches. Eddie had to stay one step ahead. Frank watched Eddie carefully, noting the tension in his friend's demeanor. "How close are we?" he asked one evening as they played chess in the library.
"Closer than Harper knows," Eddie replied, moving a pawn forward. "But we're not there yet."
"And what happens when he finds out?" Frank asked,
raising an eyebrow.
Eddie met his gaze, his voice steady.
We stick to the plan.
A warning.
Eddie's fears were confirmed when Harper summoned him to his office late one night. The warden's usually calm demeanor was replaced by barely concealed anger.
You've been busy, Carlyle, Harper said, pacing behind his desk.
Too busy.
I don't know what you mean, Eddie replied, feigning innocence. Don't play dumb with me, Harper snapped.
I know you've been sticking your nose where it doesn't belong.
Whatever you're planning, you'd better stop.
Because if you don't, he leaned in close, his voice low and menacing.
I'll make sure you regret it.
Eddie held Harper's gaze, refusing to flinch.
Is that all, sir?
Harper straightened, his expression cold.
Get out. The backup plan.
As the tension escalated, Eddie prepared for the worst. He enlisted Frank and Darnell to create a diversion, a staged fight in the mess hall that would draw the guards' attention if needed. It was a risky move, but Eddie knew that a moment of chaos might be the only way to protect the evidence if Harper decided to act.
You're putting a lot of trust in us, Darnell said as they finalized the plan.
I don't have a choice, Eddie replied. If we fail, Harper wins.
And we all lose.
The storm breaks. 2 weeks later, the prison erupted in chaos. Harper had ordered a surprise search of the library, convinced that Eddie was hiding something. As guards tore through the shelves and overturned tables, Eddie watched from a distance, his expression calm but his mind racing. The diversion worked perfectly. While the guards were occupied with the staged fight in the mess hall, Eddie slipped into the records room and retrieved the final piece of evidence, a ledger Harper had failed to collect during his sweep. By the time the guards realized what had happened, Eddie was back in his cell, the ledger safely hidden in a hollowed-out book. A glimmer of victory. The package reached its destination 2 days later.
Eddie's lawyer contacted the State Corrections Board, presenting the evidence of Harper's corruption and demanding an investigation.
The news sent shockwaves through Blackstone, and Harper's once iron grip began to weaken. For the first time in years, Eddie felt a glimmer of hope. The battle wasn't over, but the tide was finally turning.
As Eddie sat in the library that evening, watching the inmates browse the shelves, he allowed himself a small smile. He had risked everything to bring the truth to light, and though the road ahead was uncertain, he knew he was one step closer to freedom. And in Blackstone, that was all that mattered.
Chapter 11. The Escape. The evidence Eddie Carlyle had sent to his lawyer had done its job. The state had begun an investigation into Warden Leonard Harper's operations at Blackstone Penitentiary. It was the first real crack in Harper's fortress of control, and Eddie knew the warden wouldn't go down without a fight. Harper's paranoia reached new heights. Guards were stationed at every corner, the library was under constant surveillance, and Eddie's every move was monitored. Yet even under the weight of scrutiny, Eddie stayed calm, focused on the final piece of his plan, escape. The final preparations. Eddie had spent nearly 2 decades tunneling through the wall of his cell. The rock hammer he had smuggled in years earlier had been his quiet partner in this monumental task. Each night, after lights out, Eddie worked tirelessly, scraping away at the stone and hiding the debris in a hole behind the wall panel. It was a slow, painstaking process, but it had brought him closer to freedom with each passing day. By 1966, the tunnel was nearly complete. It led to an old sewage pipe that ran beneath the prison, a filthy, dangerous route, but one that would take him beyond the walls of Blackstone. All Eddie needed was the right moment. A final conversation with Frank. The night before his planned escape, Eddie sat in the library with Frank O'Connor. The room was empty, the air heavy with unspoken words.
You sure about this?
Frank asked, breaking the silence.
You know what happens if they catch you.
Eddie nodded, his expression resolute.
I've been sure for a long time, Frank. This place has taken everything from me. I won't let it take the rest of my life.
Frank leaned back in his chair, studying his friend.
I've seen a lot of guys try to get out of here, Carlyle. Most of them ended up dead. But you're different. If anyone can pull it off, it's you.
Eddie managed a small smile.
Thanks, Frank. For everything.
Frank shook his head.
Don't thank me yet. Just make it out alive, all right?
The escape. The next night, Eddie put his plan into motion. After lights out, he retrieved the rope he had hidden beneath his mattress and tied it around his waist. He removed the poster covering the hole in his cell wall, a worn image of Rita Hayworth that had hidden his work for years, and slipped inside the narrow tunnel.
The crawl through the tunnel was harrowing. The air was damp and suffocating, the darkness absolute. Eddie had to suppress his fear as he inched forward, the walls pressing in on all sides. Every scrape of his hands against the stone echoed in his ears, but he pushed on, driven by the thought of freedom. After what felt like hours, Eddie reached the end of the tunnel and emerged into the main sewage pipe. The stench was overwhelming, but Eddie barely noticed. He waded through the filth, his heart pounding as he counted each step. At last, he saw it, a faint glimmer of moonlight filtering through the grate at the end of the pipe. Using the rope, Eddie scaled the final section of the pipe and pushed open the grate. The cool night air hit his face like a blessing, and for the first time in 20 years, he stepped outside the walls of Blackstone. A new identity. Eddie's escape wasn't just about leaving Blackstone. It was about leaving Edward Carlyle behind. Before he fled, he had prepared a false identity. Randall Stevens, a name tied to the bank accounts he had helped Warden Harper set up for laundering his bribe money. Dressed in civilian clothes he had stolen from the prison's laundry, Eddie walked into a nearby town and withdrew the funds from Harper's accounts. The money, over $370,000, was more than enough to start a new life. Eddie also mailed the final piece of evidence against Harper to the local newspaper, ensuring that the warden's crimes would be exposed to the public. Harper's downfall. The fallout from Eddie's escape was swift and brutal. The evidence he had sent to the state and the press painted a damning picture of Harper's corruption. Within days, state investigators arrived at Blackstone, armed with warrants and subpoenas. Harper's empire crumbled under the weight of the scandal. The warden, faced with arrest and public disgrace, chose to end his life rather than face justice. Captain Victor Banks was taken into custody, along with several guards implicated in the scheme. For the inmates of Blackstone, it was a moment of vindication. Harper's downfall marked the end of an era, and though life inside the prison was far from easy, there was a renewed sense of hope. A message for Frank. Before Eddie left Portland, he sent a letter to Frank O'Connor. The envelope contained a photograph of a pristine beach and a single sentence. "Find the hayfield near Buxton, beneath the oak tree." Frank understood immediately. It was a promise Eddie had made long ago, a promise to share a piece of freedom with a man who had stood by him through it all. The journey to freedom. Eddie's journey took him far from the cold, gray walls of Blackstone. He traveled south, crossing the border into Mexico under his new identity. In the quiet coastal town of Zihuatanejo, he found the peace he had long dreamed of, a small house overlooking the sea, a life of simplicity and freedom. For Eddie, it was the end of a long and harrowing journey. But even as he sat on the beach, watching the waves crash against the shore, he couldn't help but think of the men he had left behind. Men like Frank, who had shared his struggles and his hopes. Eddie knew that one day, he would see them again. Chapter 12. Redemption and Reunion. The sun rose over the coastal town of Zihuatanejo, casting its golden light across the waves lapping gently at the shore. Eddie Carlyle stood barefoot on the sand, the salty breeze ruffling his shirt. He had been here for months now, rebuilding his life one quiet moment at a time. It was a life of freedom, a life he had fought for, sacrificed for, and, at long last, achieved. But even in this peaceful paradise, Eddie's thoughts often wandered back to Blackstone and the men he had left behind. He wondered how they fared, whether the small victories they had shared had made life a little more bearable. And most of all, he wondered about Frank O'Connor. Frank's journey. Frank received Eddie's letter on a crisp autumn morning, tucked inside a worn envelope smuggled into the prison. The photograph of the beach and the simple message, "Find the hayfield near Buxton, beneath the oak tree," sparked something in Frank that he hadn't felt in years, hope. It had been months since Eddie's dramatic escape, and Blackstone had changed in his absence. Warden Harper's empire had crumbled, and the prison was under new management. The atmosphere was still harsh, but there was a sense of relief among the inmates. For the first time in decades, Blackstone felt like a place where survival wasn't just a cruel illusion. Frank's parole came shortly after Eddie's letter. After serving 40 years, he walked out of Blackstone with little more than the clothes on his back and a worn pair of boots. The world outside was foreign and overwhelming, but Frank had a mission. He would honor Eddie's promise. The hayfield. The journey to Buxton took Frank through winding country roads and small, sleepy towns. He felt like a ghost moving through a world that had forgotten him, but the thought of Eddie kept him going. When he finally reached the hayfield, the sight of the great oak tree brought tears to his eyes. Beneath its sprawling branches,
Frank found a small, weathered tin box buried in the soft earth. Inside was a bundle of cash, a letter, and a map. The letter was written in Eddie's familiar, steady hand.
"Frank,
if you're reading this, it means you made it out. I can't tell you how much that means to me. I left something here to help you start over, a small piece of the life we dreamed about. Follow the map, and you'll find me. I'll be waiting."
"Eddie."
Frank folded the letter carefully, his hands trembling. For the first time in years, he allowed himself to believe in the possibility of happiness. Reunion in Zihuatanejo. The journey to Mexico was long and fraught with uncertainty, but Frank pressed on. With every mile, the weight of his past seemed to lighten, replaced by the promise of something new. When Frank finally arrived in Zihuatanejo, the sight of the ocean took his breath away. He followed the directions on the map to a small house perched on a hill overlooking the water. As he approached, he saw Eddie sitting on the porch, a book in his lap and a contented smile on his face. "About time you showed up," Eddie said, his voice warm with humor. Frank grinned, his eyes misting over. "You didn't think I'd let you have all the fun, did you?" The two men embraced, their laughter mingling with the sound of the waves. For the first time in decades, they were free, truly free. A new beginning. Life in Zihuatanejo was simple and sweet. Eddie and Frank spent their days fishing, fixing up the small house, and walking along the beach. They talked about the past, the struggles they had endured and the people they had left behind, but they didn't dwell on it. The future was what mattered now. Eddie often visited the local village, where he had begun teaching the children how to read and write. It was a small way to give back, to use the skills he had honed in the library to make a difference. Frank, ever the practical one, started a small repair business, fixing boats and machinery for the villagers. Their lives were far from extravagant, but they were rich in ways that mattered. The power of hope. One evening, as the sun dipped below the horizon, Eddie and Frank sat on the beach, watching the waves roll in. The sky was painted in hues of orange and pink, and the air was filled with the sound of the ocean. "You ever think about how we got here?" Frank asked, breaking the comfortable silence. "Every day," Eddie replied. "It wasn't easy, and it sure as hell wasn't fair. But we made it. That's what matters." Frank nodded, his gaze fixed on the horizon. "You were right, you know, about hope. It really is the one thing they couldn't take from us." Eddie smiled, his eyes shining with emotion. "And it's the one thing that brought us here. The legacy of Blackstone." Though Eddie and Frank had left Blackstone far behind, the lessons they had learned within its walls stayed with them. They had seen the worst of humanity, but they had also seen its resilience, its capacity for kindness and courage even in the darkest of places. Their story was one of survival, yes, but it was also a story of redemption, a testament to the power of hope and the unbreakable strength of the human spirit. And as the waves continued to lap at the shore, Eddie and Frank knew they had finally found what they had been searching for all those years: freedom, peace, and the chance to start again.
The end.